Welcome to the Mobile Game Dev Playbook. This podcast is brought to you in association with Game Refinery. Join us as we uncover the latest trends in mobile game design.
Hello and welcome to the Mobile Game Dev Playbook. Thanks for tuning in for another episode. This is a podcast all about what makes a great mobile game, what is and isn't working for mobile game designers, and all of the latest trends. I'm your host, John Jordan, and joining me today, we have two very familiar faces. So we have Erno Kieske and Wilhelm Valtelainen, both game analysts from Game Refinery by Liftoff. How's it going, guys?
Hi, it's going great, John. How are you?
I'm going great as well. Great to be here once again.
Good, yes. Looking forward to this one. Good. So this is going to be a very interesting sort of look back at the history of mobile game monetization and look forward to the future as well, because that's sort of the point, looking at the big trends. And it's sort of interesting because this is the sort of stuff we touch upon in every episode in a maybe like a, you know, depending on what game or what project we're talking about, we might talk about certain bits more than others. But this is like a whole dedicated show just about sort of what's been going on. And I know you guys have been preparing in detail. So I'm going to let you go, ask the question and let you guys go on. So what are the interesting trends that have been happening over the last 2 years with monetization?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, a lot of different things and topics that we can talk about. It's a wide subject. But I was thinking, like, if we start maybe a little bit from, you know, kind of like a higher picture, what kind of like a bigger things that are happening in the market that then have an effect on the monetization, and then go maybe deeper into the like individual features and mechanics and so on. So I guess the first one we could little bit discuss about is quite recent trend of this kind of like a web store monetization coming more and more relevant, naturally because of the like the results of the Apple Epic lawsuit case and so on. But now it's really starting to pick up and really starting to be kind of like a visible more and more. It's not super common yet. But if we look at now to the market, what is there at the moment? The games that have this type of a web store. So basically, just like to get everybody on board, and what is a web store? So basically, it's an online store for where you can buy items, buy currency or whatever, and then connect your account to that, and then you can basically make purchases in a website, in a web store. And why, of course, this is beneficial is naturally because it's bypassing the platform fees. So you have your Apple fees, you have your Google fees. So for developers, it's naturally lucrative. And as we know, with the kind of like a changes that happened with the lawsuit, you are not directly able to, you know, advertise and link your web stores inside the apps nowadays yet, but you are now allowed to have them, and you are allowed to market them with your emails and stuff like that as an example. So where we have then seen them. So at the moment, it's mainly used for the kind of like a hardcore, mid-core type of a games, which is kind of natural because usually those are the games that have the most engaged users. They are, you know, going through online and are much more, you know, easier way or like easier to kind of like create this type of a store, and then the user actually find it and so on. So because you got, if you're not able to do it in game, many of the casual game players just play the game and they're not like engaged that much outside of the actual app, as an example. And especially, you know, forex strategy games, we have seen plenty of those using it. Scopely is actually a one good example. They have really doubled down. Basically, their whole portfolio now has, I think, like pretty much all of the games have a web store now. Even actually Yahtzee with Buddies, which is the first casual game that we have seen to have a web store available for the purchases. And then if we a little bit talk about like what kind of a web stores there are. So those are the genres that we have seen it the most. Those are the reasons naturally why different companies are going for them. But like the classic examples of these web stores is that you buy bundles. There are like specific web store bundles, and it's kind of like an IAP offer inside a game or whatever. But then naturally you might get it for a better price for the consumer as well. Or as an example, Supercell sells for Clash of Clans. You can buy like bundle of 3 battle passes with a cheaper price, and then you like when the new battle pass comes around, then you already have the battle pass and so on and so on. But then one more like specific example that I want to highlight is actually this web currency, or how kind of like a one of these games are actually, or they have an specific currency that is used only for the web store. So Game of Thrones Conquest, so from Warner Brothers. It's a 4X strategy game. And if you open the app nowadays, if you go inside the game, everything, even inside the game, you have the, you know, the basic premium currency purchase that you can buy whatever diamonds they are inside the game. Everything in the store are priced with that. But they have now another currency called gems. And you are not actually able to directly purchase that inside the game. But then if you click that, okay, what is this currency? It just says, okay, this is something, you know, interesting currency, whatever, learn more from our website or stuff like that. So it's kind of like, it's not directly advertising the currency, but it is there to kind of like pinpoint that, okay, there is actually something like this that I can make a purchase. And then maybe I go, you know, online and search for it. And then it actually, you when you go online, then you find the store and then you start to do some calculations. Thought, oh, actually, this is a better price if I buy it from here and then make the purchase with the gems as an example. So they are the first one that we have seen that actually have a specific currency that is tied to the like a web store, not just individual bundle purchases that you make by you know, connecting to your account and so on. But yeah, definitely something that we are expecting to see more and more happening is happening more and more developers, especially the bigger ones, and like I said, mid-core, hardcore games are moving towards this type of monetization for sure.
Yeah, definitely makes sense.
Yeah, it's one of those kind of like a bigger thing. So if we continue on, then another kind of like maybe a bigger thing that is happening mainly because of the more kind of like a macro level things happening for mobile game market. So we have been talking about in this podcast for ages and many, many times already about hybridization. So not going to spend too much time on it, but it's definitely in terms of the monetization, something that we cannot skip if we talk about trends in the past few years. So naturally, if you look at the market, basically the hybridization happening from the both sides of the market. So casual games, you know, hybrid casual games, taking elements, implementing IAP mechanics, trying to make the game, like the life cycle of the games longer. But then also from the other side of the spectrum, so the hardcore games, basically 4X strategy games and so on, are then taking elements from the casual games and other mid-core games in order to kind of like appeal to a wider audience. Because naturally, what drives that, or one thing that drives that, is the new marketing landscape of harder and harder advertise targeting, as an example. But yeah, definitely a big trend that I would see say happening because of these bigger, you know, events, IDFA changes and so on, and affecting the whole market on both sides. In terms of the ad monetization, games, hypercasuals adding, you know, IAP monetization, and then on the other side, widening the spectrum, so to speak.
And I guess in general, when any sort of game shows sort of success and sort of best practice in how to, yeah, here's a technique that seems to work, then it doesn't really matter what the genre is or what market it, you know, it may be a very specific sort of technique, but everyone's going to have a go to see, well, does that work for us? And I guess, you know, with all these sort of techniques we're looking at, you know, probably there's no one single game that they're all going to work for, but actually, you know, so developers have to sort of, you know, sort of see what fits for them. But actually, you know, the interesting thing is over time, more and more of these sort of initially quite specific monetization things actually do work more generally in games, because the audience has been exposed to them in different ways, and just get, you know, part of it is just when anything comes in to begin with, everyone's kind of like, oh, why would I pay for that? And then over time, it's sort of, well, of course I pay for that. Yeah, of course I get a much better deal if I you know, have a subscription going, or, you know, so I think a lot of these things just over time just become more relevant and more useful to game developers in a way that in the first sort of few months, obviously, they're not at all.
Yeah, definitely, and it's, you know, somebody always has to be the first one to go, and then there are, you know, people following that and you know, implementing, and, you know, then, you know, iterating on those like same principle ideas that kind of like drive these different things.
Yeah, of course, like talking about more like going deeper into specific games, like talking about iterating, of course, Archer is really interesting sort of hybrid example of it's a casual game. Usually casual games are really like core game, focused monetization, but of course Archer has the RPG meta, so it's meta monetized sort of as well. On top of that, you're just purchasing more continues or stuff like that. And then talking about casual games in more general, of course, meta elements coming to casual games have been something we have been talking for a while. And while that's not right now, like a massive trend right now, it's been going for a while already, but still some of these games, especially kind of if you're more lightweight, like Lily's Garden and Homescapes, they have started a little bit monetize their meta layers as well. So on top of those games, monetizing, you know, with energy mechanics, continuous boosters. On top of that, you have direct purchase cosmetic pets in Lily's Garden, for example, from Progress in a purchase offers, which we're going to talk about a bit later. Then in Lily's Garden, they just added also new rewards to their Battle Pass plans. So instead of just getting boosters in your Battle Pass plan, you're also getting stuff for your meta. So you're getting cosmetic skins for the characters. And just in the recent most Battle Pass, they also added these decorative Halloween themed furniture skins. So instead of, you know, you having to choose from the three basic ones, which are usually always free in the meta layer, you can also now customize those with like this exclusive Halloween cosmetics as well. So a little bit of sort of meta monetization coming to casual as well.
One thing also is actually quite interesting because like we talked about this ad monetized game moving away, or like at least hybridizing the monetization model of adding IAPs. But to be honest, if we look at the like the top crossing games, and that's naturally where our main focus is on Game Refinery. So in there also, it's not a like massive trend, to be honest, but still many games in the like past year, for example, have also added ad monetization as part of their monetization model. And one genre, for example, not all of them do it, but like many examples, like Project Makeover, Toon Blast, at least those two games, Two Dots is the third one, Lily's Garden
just added, yeah, same as, yeah, they have the same as the Project Makeover has, when you can watch an ad to get two extra lives before the level. So
yeah, they've been like experimenting now, or adding, or like making this hybrid model, kind of like trying to monetize the non-payers at least a little bit. So it's of course like risky, and like the kind of like a find the right balance so you don't cannibalize your, you know, IAP price points and so on. But there are interesting, like in terms of implementation, quite interesting ones. Like the Two Dots one is, I think, the most kind of like a unique one. Basically, so if you lose a level, then you can watch an ad in exchange of this kind of like a reward wheel, and then there are chances that you get extra moves, or there are chances of, I think, Wilhelm, you remember, or you have analyzed the games better, but it's not even direct that, okay, watch an ad, then you get, I don't know, plus three extra moves, but they have actually added a randomizer mechanic on top of that as well.
I guess the single fastest way to sort of destroy your retention is to badly implement ads. I mean, I guess sort of generally we've seen that. So I think it is a sort of, that's the hardest balancing act, because particularly if you've been running games for a while without ads and then you put ads in, it really does sort of break the flow. And there are some games, it's just that you kind of, it works better where you would put the ads, obviously sort of level-based stuff, you know. But there are some where you kind of think, wow, that's sort of brave.
Yeah, and especially I would say on mid-core games, like actually one game that just like I think a few weeks ago added ads was Cookie Run Kingdom, which is a turn-based RPG where the genre in the genre itself, ads are not common in any way. But they, of course, Cookie Run is a bit maybe a more casual approach to the turn-based RPG, and all the team and everything appealing to a little bit wider audience. But yeah, they just added ads. And actually we have one analyst in the company who is playing it on a kind of like a regular basis, and he was a bit, you know, hesitant on the additional ads, even though when they were only rewarded, they are not like interstitial ads or anything like that, but like it felt weird to him at least initially. But like, yeah, we'll see like if they are able to, you know, or does it affect the retention in any bigger way or so on. So
I think kind of that sum up like whole thing, you know, we have the ad monetization coming and then we have the monetized meta layers and so on. I think like more and more games are trying to, you know, add additional monetization streams to their game and additional elements they can monetize and going away from the core monetization to meta and stuff like that. So, yeah.
And I guess maybe as well, you're seeing a bit more pressure on the monetization side now because people can't necessarily extend their audience in the way they once did by really understanding the UA funnels. The UA funnel's gone pretty skewy. So you're not quite sure if it's worth you spending a lot of money because you're not quite sure what you're going to get in. So at least if you just sort of assume, well, if we just stick some more monetization into what we've got, maybe that's the best way to sort of grow at the moment. But maybe that's sort of playing into it a little bit as well.
Yeah. Actually, tapping on that one, it's actually interesting. Like, it's not necessarily a direct monetization, but overall in the casual game. So naturally, as you know, scaling new games is harder than ever and live ops is becoming more bigger and bigger and more important than ever. Something that we have noticed in casual games as well is that naturally, not necessarily the mechanics of the monetization itself, but like how, for example, many level-based puzzle games, how they are adding so much events and how they are using those to drive basically players to the same monetization sinks that you already had or like have been used in these type of games for ages. So there are so many, you know, examples of, you know, for example, competition trending a little bit on these type of a puzzle games. So it's not PvP directly, but having various implementations of kind of like a leaderboard based competition, or there are now these 1v1 competition events also for match 3, where it feels a little bit more personal, kind of like a pushing, like tapping into that competitive motivation as an example. Then, for example, tying, of course, the loss aversion and win streak stuff, nothing new itself either, but like many the kind of like events that are now built combine these elements. For example, Royal Match has a quite recent event where they, you know, have this competitive element of kind of like a race event that you need to complete levels to beat others or beat levels more quickly than the others. But then actually there's also win streak, kind of like a loss aversion mechanic built into that. So if you kind of like lose a level, then you actually go back to the starting line in the race. So it's there's the competitive push, there's the kind of like a loss aversion push. And then naturally the event itself is not necessarily monetized, but it kind of like exposes players to the your monetization sinks much, much more, or like incentivizes to go player to kind of like purchase that extra move as an example.
Like I say, I guess it's sort of interesting that sort of stuff is some people even in casual games sort of quite like that competition bit, but clearly other people don't. So I guess it's a way of placing it. So people who don't like it don't feel like they're missing out on this sort of super cool thing. And sort of, you don't want to encourage them to sort of churn out, but for the people who are competitive, then that sort of little nudge towards them, you know, you wouldn't normally maybe spend this money playing the game normally, but in this particular sort of mode that you've chosen to be in, then, you know, you're sort of opting in for slightly more aggressive monetization. Also. So, I mean, with all these things, I think they are very difficult to balance.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why, like, for example, we haven't seen, you know, direct PvP modes in match 3 that much and stuff like that. But it's the fine balance of, like, you know, you have the competitive events that are there to push the players who are interested in it, but then it's really easy to kind of like ignore as well and just play because the progression is made by playing your usual levels and that's it. So there's no specific PvP mode that I go and play, but I actually just play on my own pace and then I can care about it that, okay, I'm now actually at the top spot with the top rewards and I want to play more, or then I can just totally ignore it. So it's the kind of like how you bring the competition side or competitive element to the users. It's not as, you know, in your face as in many other genres.
Personally, I find this whole sort of the event trend in casuals, like being, because many of these games, like, I know you're the expert in, let's say, in the Township, for example, it basically runs on all these kinds of events. Of course, we have soon the feature that's coming to the game, Randy, service where you can actually research these specific kind of events, like, for example, you want to watch loss aversion events or renovation events and so on. So that's kind of cool. But I think, for example, renovation events are extremely good way of sort of indirectly boosting your monetization because, well, of course, we talked just about the competition. You have the competition elements there, incentivizing you to play more, but also renovation being like, of course, it's going to be super satisfying for you to complete that limited time renovation mode before it ends. So incentivize you more. But also on top of that, we had a lot of these indirect examples. Some games are also directly monetizing them, or some casual games are directly monetizing their events. For example, the loss aversion events, at least Kugin Diary. So it's one of the top crossing time management games. They have had at least a couple of these different loss aversion events, which is basically directly monetized. So when you play this, actually these special event-based levels, and you have to win 5 in a row. If you lose one, then you're going to lose the streak and you have to start all over. But then, of course, if you lose, then you can purchase extra continue to continue that streak inside the event. And there's really often, in terms of Kugin Diary, in their events, they have their own specific energy mechanic. So you have this special monetized energy mechanic monetizing those event levels. So that's kind of interesting case as well of directly monetizing your events. And on top of that, to talk about like directly monetizing events, like I would say this is quite rare, but we've seen it a little bit in some of the top crossing games, is basically offering you the chance to boost your event rewards as well by, you know, making a small purchase. For example, at the start of the event or when you're receiving the rewards, you get this offer. Hey, pay this extra few dollars to double your event rewards. And also there are sometimes boosters at the start of the event offered that, hey, you want double or triple event progression, you can purchase this booster to boost you throughout the event. So let's say finish your renovations faster or stuff like that.
And I guess that's kind of interesting because if you paid for that upfront, it's sort of like, you know, the whether it works or not, sort of having the gym membership, the whole point is, well, I get a gym membership because that'll force me to go to the gym, and maybe it works for Robert. But if you paid for that a bit upfront, then you're like, well, I'm going to at least for the first few days play that more to sort of get in it. And then any monetization offers you get within that sort of loop, because you've already paid for a little bit upfront, you sort of feel like, well, that's, I'm getting extra, you know, reward for that. So you can see psychologically how that would work for some people.
Yeah, and I guess that kind of like it kind of ties into the next topic. So like we've been talking about naturally battle passes a lot, but actually one of the trends for battle passes seems to be that like exactly that kind of like a shorter term event monetization, or like shorter term like event track monetization. So we have seen more and more these games, like of course you have your bigger battle passes that is kind of like overarching for the whole game, for example, but then these, you know, shorter, like I don't know, 1 week event, then you have that kind of like a paid reward track, and that is basically a battle pass, purchasing a kind of like a boosted reward, purchasing a better reward track for your event, and then monetize through that. So there are actually many, many examples that have started to do this quite recently all around genres. So there's, for example, Merge Mansion started to do this. It's a merge game, casual. Rise of Kingdoms, a 4X strategy game, has been, 4X strategy games overall have been doing this for a long, long while. Call of Duty Mobile's latest kind of like a game mode is this tournament mode, which is a weekend mode that you can only play on weekends. That it's basically you play these free-for-all and duo modes over the weekend, and every weekend there's a reward track, and then you can actually buy like better rewards for the weekend with a really small kind of like a price pot. But basically, it's a weekend-long battle pass. And then Clash Royale has these monthly tournaments, for example, as well. And there, basically, you're just, you know, competing against others and getting score. But in that one as well, it's much, much more shorter. And it's much more, you know, smaller part than the overarching battle pass that the kind of like a Clash Royale also has. But you can actually, or like the event itself is monetized, that you can purchase this kind of like an extra boost, extra track of rewards for just this one event. So that is definitely one kind of like a thing that, or like implementation that we have started to see more and more in terms of the kind of like the idea of the battle pass mechanics.
Yeah, I find that like extremely kind of clever way. Of course, comes with its own risk, and battle passes themselves are never an easy balance. But if you like, of course, we have noticed the power of battle pass and all the different benefits. So why not try, if you want to monetize your event, why not on top of the free rewards add premium reverse on top of that for players who want to, you know, pay. And of course, like as we mentioned, if you players who then purchase the premium rewards or the premium pass of the event, they are even more incentivized to complete that event. Just, yeah, benefits are numerous there, possibly.
I guess the other thing, I mean, battle passes, they tended to be, because they've been so popular, they've ended up being sort of quite long in duration. So if you have like a month-long battle pass, that's a sort of, in and of itself, I think, you know, all these things, the problem, I guess, is things become slightly diminishing over time. So the first time there's a battle pass, everyone piles in. And then the second time, it's still exciting. But by the time you're on your sixth battle pass, it's sort of like, you know, it's not necessarily, even if people are engaging in it and buying into it, they're not necessarily driving the same sort of engagement that it once did. So sort of breaking it down into smaller bits, it's sort of just giving people that little sort of reminder, well, here's this extra reward you can get. But, you know, it is interesting because I guess the more these monetization things come in, the more it sort of fragments your sort of audience, because previously you sort of had, you know, if we go back more than 2 years ago, we had the very simple thing. We had free-to-play games and in-app purchases, and that was sort of all there was. You played it with these, you know, ground things up, you spent money to get faster gems, and now you have these incredibly sort of complex economic models that are all sort of linking into each other, and different cohorts of people who won't pay anything at all, but then there's all these other different layers. So I imagine, just in terms of like how you would, from an economic point of view, sort of manage all this sort of stuff, maybe the sort of the thing you have to be very careful about is as we sort of already mentioned, adding a new thing may be great, but if that's going to end up cannibalizing something that you're not going to realize for a month's time that you're making much more money, because just the, you know, the moving parts in it are incredibly complex.
Yeah, if we look at these, yeah, like you said, the especially the more hardcore game you go, like it is insane the economies that those games nowadays have and how complex they are, and even like for those shooter games, when you think about you're just selling cosmetics, but like the mechanics inside the game and the cadence and how they'd run those events and how different things are, like how then the cosmetics are monetized, it gets really complicated really quickly. So
you mentioned can battle passes become boring? Well, I think really interesting trend to touch upon are like these battle pass, like these unique, more unique battle pass mechanics. As of course, like battle pass itself, it's nothing new anymore, really. Like the battle passes are in every genre pretty much on mobile. I think looking at the data, over 60% of the top 20% performing games in terms of revenue in the US have battle passes. So they are like, you know, it's not new thing anymore. But we have seen on top of these that we mentioned using battle pass mechanics in events, we have seen actually quite numerous amounts of unique ways to implement battle passes, make battle passes more exciting, bring additional bonuses. So some of these really interesting to mention here are, for example, having multiple battle passes in your game. So some like bigger games, let's say like Mobile Legends Bang Bang or Hearthstone, where you have your normal mode. In Mobile Legends Bang Bang, the mode is playing MOBA. Hearthstone, the main mode is just, you know, playing the turn-based card game. But both of those modes actually have their own auto-chess modes as well, like fully-fledged modes. They're so sort of comprehensive modes that certainly many of the players can only play specifically those auto-chess modes and without caring about the main thing in the game at all, because, you know, there's kind of almost two games in one game. So both of those games, Hearthstone, very recently brought a secondary battle pass plan for its auto-chess mode. So, you know, monetizing those auto-chess mode players specifically. Of course, other games like AFK Arena. AFK Arena itself is a game of massive amounts of different modes. It's almost like a kind of like a platform of different game modes nowadays. And it has, I think, three main battle pass plans, like three different unique ones. And then on top of that, different event battle pass plans and so on. So there's numerous battle pass plans going on at the same time. Then another interesting one, so for example, League of Legends Wild Rift just added in their latest battle pass plan this battle pass specific currency that you get when you're progressing in the battle pass. You get this currency, and also when you have completed the battle pass plan, you then you can continue getting these Palabas levels, which then you get more of this currency. And then this currency is used in the Palabas's own shop to purchase more of these exclusive rewards. And it's also monetized more by, you can then purchase more of that currency if you, let's say you want to purchase all the exclusive extra stuff in the shop, then you can purchase directly also those that currency. So that's one way as well of monetizing the Battle Pass more, but also incentivizing players to level the Battle Pass after completing it.
That is like what I like, some of these cosmetic based games where the Battle Pass is really on kind of like a center of everything. It's kind of like a one way to increase the spend depth for the really, you know, whale and hardcore players for your Battle Pass, because usually Battle Pass, it's that like individual one transaction that you make and that's about it. But like if you look at, for example, PUBG Mobile, there are multiple these type of similar kind of like small nuances and tweaks, which makes more reason to, for example, skip the tiers or purchase those tier skips and then, you know, still continue get value out of the Battle Pass system. So it's kind of like increases the spend depth and the kind of like a value for the most hardcore players inside your Battle Pass system. So
yeah, absolutely. Then some additional, to quickly mention, additional other like things in Mecha Arena, they've added a piggy bank system to their Battle Pass plan. So when you purchase, or when you basically progress in the Battle Pass pass, then you also fill your piggy bank at the same time. And when you purchase the premium pass, you then get to, on top of gaining the premium rewards for the pass, you also gain the rewards in the piggy bank. Dragon Laces Mobile had a really unique one when there's three different kind of difficulties of the Battle Pass plan. Let's say you're a PvP player, you can select the PvP focused Battle Pass plan. If you're a more casual player, you can select the casual focused one. So there's that's really unique one. And then we've seen social mechanics tied to Battle Pass plans. Like I think Royal Match had this when you purchase the premium pass, you also give this guild gift to your guild mates. So that's kind of nice. And Top War had guild focused progressive Battle Pass plans and stuff like that. But I think really interesting ones are the auto renewing Battle Pass plans and sort of getting extra benefits from the Battle Pass plans. I think Erno Call of Duty had a really interesting one, right?
Yeah, I guess it ties a little bit on the kind of like the overall the subscriptions, but it's not that common yet. But naturally, if we think about the Google, for example, their fee of subscription, like all the recurring subscriptions, it went down to 15% in start of this year, as an example. And that's naturally one of the drivers which makes the like implementing subscriptions in some way in your game more interesting or more appealing, definitely. And then we have seen a little bit of this, how different companies tie actually a Battle Pass into an auto-recurring subscription, because in itself, it's kind of like a subscription already, the Battle Pass. So you are purchasing and then you have kind of like a benefits for a 30-day period or whatever. But like, for example, Call of Duty Mobile, what they did some months ago is that you can purchase still the individual kind of like a season as an IAP, or then you can subscribe to a monthly subscription. It's a bit more higher price point than purchasing an individual season, but then you get some even extra benefits, even some more unique cosmetics. You get a little bit of, I think, more weapon XP in the game. You're developing those weapons and so on. And there are some small like subscription benefits. So now you have an option as a player that, okay, do I want to pay and buy this kind of like an individual kind of like a Battle Pass season, or do I want to then subscribe to this subscription? I'm going to get the Battle Pass, but I'm going to get a little bit more other benefits as well. It's a bit more expensive for me, but then on the developer side as well, if they are getting a higher fee, like higher cuts of the whole revenues, it's an interesting kind of like a thing that I would assume that more companies would try out at least to some extent. Pretty sure, but not many examples yet. And Call of Duty is one, and then Wildlife has been doing it with their games like Zuba and Tennis Class and so on.
And I guess the subscription as a sort of model has only just come about, I guess, as broadly the general population has become more used to subscriptions for everything. So, you know, it was probably that long ago, but certainly 10 years ago, subscriptions were seen as, you know, being sort of quite an odd thing to do for content. And now, obviously, you know, Netflix and Spotify and all that, you know, it's now very common for people to have, like, this is, you know, I know how, what my subscriptions are, and sort of game subscriptions have been a big thing. So I guess it's sort of, again, it's all those things become available as people just become more used to, that's how we sort of pay for things. And yeah, it's it. Again, going back to the complexity of it, it's sort of, when Battle Passes came in, they were the thing, and now you have sort of these, yeah, as you were describing there, Wilhelm, these sort of multiple Battle Passes on top of Battle Passes. I guess the broad monetization thing is for game developers is they want as many people as possible to pay something, and they always want to be charging as much as possible to the people who really want to pay as much as possible. That's always the sort of the tension between it, and I guess the more you chop down the sort of cohorts of between that, the sort of easier it is to work out what you want to charge at certain levels, but then sort of the harder it almost becomes for the users to sort of know where they go, because I guess still in free-to-play mobile games, what percentage of people pay anything at all? You know, not assuming watching adverts. I mean, I guess it's still that 95%, depending on the genre, 98% of people are not paying anything at all. So it's kind of funny how sophisticated it's become for a very sort of small percentage of people. And I guess the other thing about subscriptions as well is, I don't know, if probably don't have any data on this, but if I'm subscribing, I'm only going to subscribe to a certain number of games a month. So you're sort of seeing, if a developer can get someone to locked up in a subscription, then that's sort of really meaning they're going to be probably playing your game and not someone else's game. So that's sort of an added sort of competition thing there, isn't it? Where you're really using that as a sort of like a moat or whatever, you know, competitive advantage you get over other people's games, which is beyond just what's going on within one game.
Yeah, definitely. That's and it's a really good point. But I also, like, in terms of Battle Passes and subscriptions, it's an interesting, there's a really good GDC talk by Supercell when they added a Battle Pass to their Clash of Clans game. Of course, this is all, like, always, it's case by case. With Clash Royale, they had a kind of like a negative effect when they added a Battle Pass initially, and then they figured it out. But, like, it's an interesting, in that talk, he's talking about kind of like how the actual average revenue per paying user went down, but then the converting users actually went significantly up. So the revenues were actually higher. So it was kind of like a more healthier kind of like a monetization model for the long run. But yeah, it's always case by case, of course. Actually, talking about Battle Passes and especially the cosmetic monetized games, next we could talk a little bit about gacha. So still probably one of the key, especially mid-core, hardcore games, the monetization mechanic, the main one with the most revenues generated, is coming mainly from the gacha still. Like, even for those Call of Duty mobiles and so on, they have those battle passes. But, like, if you look at, for example, on those games, where the most unique and where the most kind of like cosmetics are, they are actually sold through various means of limited time gachas and mechanics like that. So, of course, these gachas are nothing new in itself, but, like, in there as well as in battle passes, there are these kind of like different ways that developers are trying to, you know, twist and turn around with the specific, you know, you have your loot box, this is your reward pool, and then just pull from it, and that's it. So some, you know, recent kind of like more and more common mechanics that I could mention, of course, are variations of the pity mechanics. So naturally, in pity mechanics, we mean basically that if you pull the gacha for multiple times, then you get some benefits from it. One example that has become more and more popular also in the West, in the China market, it's been a thing for a long time, but it's this kind of like a in gacha shops. So as Wilhelm was talking about, kind of like a battle pass currency, but, like, now there are many these gacha types, especially for the kind of like these top cosmetic games like shooters and so on. So if you pull the gacha, you might get a unique cosmetic, or then you also accumulate this currency, then which you can then use in the specific shop inside that one gacha. So it's kind of like this pity mechanic that you are accumulating this currency, and then you can actually make the purchase that you want. So you feel kind of like going forward on something all the time, at least. Then another actually interesting one, I think we talked about it on the kind of like maybe possible trends of this year, like when we had that kind of like a podcast about a year ago. About this gacha mechanism was this preview gachas, which was then implemented in FIFA in PC and console. So preview gacha basically means that you can actually see and preview your kind of like a pool before you actually make the decision to make the transaction and spend your currency, spend your premium currency. So now there has been actually a couple examples also, not that much yet, but like a couple examples in mobile market, Call of Duty Mobile being one of them. So they have this draw now, pay later gotchas that they are trying out. It's how it works is that basically you can do it once per week. And I think the event lasted for 2 weeks. So you're going to do it that much. But you can do it, you know, once you can see, okay, these are the items I'm going to get. Will I make the purchase or not? And make the decision. If you don't, then you can just, you know, cancel it and don't make a purchase anything. And then you can do it once a week. Or there is kind of like a pity mechanic tied into it. So if you pull five times, so you actually make five transactions, then again, you get another, you know, preview one. But this kind of like a mechanic is interesting, kind of like a showcasing or like giving players more transparency in that sense. Another example game that is using is, it's also from Tencent, but it's actually on China market. They made this kind of like a version for the Teamfight Tactics Riot's auto chess game. They made their own version, Golden Spatula, for the Chinese markets. And it's been doing really well. But they have been also, for example, trying out this type of a mechanic. So interesting, kind of like a twist and kind of like a bit more transparent in that sense. And overall, like the whole discussion about the gachas and the transparency of them. We got the odds for the gachas not that long ago, when that had to be disclosed. But there are still a little bit sometimes, you know, things that are not so transparent in those mechanics. So for example, in Call of Duty, you know, like I talked about, the main revenue they make is from the gachas. And they have, for example, this mechanic of kind of like a limited time gacha, which you pull, and then each time you get a reward that gets removed from the reward pool. But the actual price goes up every single time you make the pull. And then the most unique one naturally is super, super, super low kind of like a chance. So you get the feeling that you are moving towards a little bit, but then the price goes up and the price rises are not disclosed itself. It says that, you know, price is going up, but it's not disclosed itself. So naturally, kind of like a, this kind of like a more maybe transparency with the, you know, all the talk about the gachas and so on. I don't think it's ever going to go away. It is such a permanent part of the monetization for all of those type of games. But some kind of a transparency, kind of like more and more these mechanics get tweaks and new things are coming. So I would assume are coming also.
I guess it's sort of interesting that you sort of, the two you mentioned in the West, at least, were EA and Activision, who are obviously two of the biggest games companies and most, I guess, two that are most vulnerable to sort of government legislation around that. And I guess it's, those are the ones who are going to make a particular effort to be more transparent, I guess. I mean, it seems to be one of these things that has been rumbling on for years now about sort of legislation, and everyone's sort of saying it's coming soon, but never sort of does. And maybe just by sort of chipping away and making things more transparent and letting people sort of see that, then that's sort of actually enough. It's fascinating.
Yeah, and we mentioned about like the limited time gachas and like how powerful they are in the cosmetic monetized games, and we talk about the hybridization a bit. So I think like really kind of interesting trend as well as looking at some casual games that have started also using limited time gacha monetization. Like maybe not as their huge part as in, let's say, Call of Duty Mobile or Garena Free Fire, but like still, you know, to add on top of that, just add some extra monetized layer. So Cooking Diaries, interesting example. So they have this cosmetic meta layer on top of the other meta layers in the game. So you collect nice outfits for your avatar character, which basically, many of those outfits are, you can also purchase them to these limited time gachas. There's not really any special mechanics or anything, but it's just the, you know, the limited time and, you know, brings that extra exclusivity to those cosmetics. And also Redecor. So it's this room decorating game. Basically, core gameplay is all about room decorating. And then there's this meta layer where you're collecting these different decoration styles that you can use them to decorate. So, and many of those decoration styles, especially when they bring new sets, new ones, they are monetized through limited time gotchas. But actually, just quickly on top of that, the other different interesting mechanics that Erno mentioned, I want to touch upon the engagement gotchas that we have seen. Like that's kind of like, I don't know if that's even the perfect name for it, but there are a bit of kind of engagement gotchas. So, and gotchas that you don't actually directly purchase the gotcha pool for. So Diablo Immortal, of course, really sort of talked about game in terms of the gotcha. So in Diablo Immortal gotchas, the gotcha doesn't work in a way that you just buy it and then you get something, but you're actually buying these premium keys. Then you insert to sort of this dungeon thing. You insert them there. Then you complete this really quick dungeon and then you get the loot. So there's kind of this playing mode or playing this through this level like in middle of it. So that's kind of definitely compared to normal gotchas, something totally different, but still the gacha element is still there. And also Pokemon Unite, I think, has maybe even more unique one. So in Pokemon Unite, you basically gain gacha pools by playing the game itself. That's the only way you can gain gacha pools. You have to play to gain this energy to your kind of this machine. And when the machine is full, you can pull the gacha. But the thing here is that there's a limit per week how many times you can pull from the gacha. And what is monetized then is that you can purchase extra gacha pools, so extra energy capacity. If you want to play more and pull more, you can purchase that directly. That's definitely interesting one.
And I guess in general, the reason that gachas are so interesting is, or so important for monetization is they are sort of the key way that basically they are sort of uncapped ways of spending. So if you are a whale in the game who has to have everything, then, you know, gachas are absolutely designed to take all the money you can throw at them. I mean, that's sort of so, the battle passes, I guess, were sort of designed to sort of have these lower levels of monetization that people who weren't going to spend, you know, tons, but felt like they were sort of making some progress. But there are clearly some people who are very rich or very interested in the game or both who just have to have everything and gachas. That's the reason everyone's got them, because that's how the easiest way of sort of self-defining whales are going to keep pulling till they've got everything. And you know, that's just the human nature thing there. Cool. Have we got any more? I think we have a few more, do we? One more at least.
Yeah, we can touch upon one more, and it's not a mechanic itself, but it's also interesting to study how kind of like a bundle offers actually have evolved, and there are a lot of, you know, ways to create your bundle offers as well. And then, you know, naturally it's the UI, UX and all that stuff as well, but it can be kind of like interesting examples there, like mechanic wise. So good example is these progressive IAP offers that I think Royal Match was, at least in my idea, was the first one who brought them. And then now they are really widely spread on the all across the casual genre. So basically the idea is there that you can first claim free stuff and then, you know, the UI shows you that, okay, now make this purchase of $2.99, for example. And then after that, you can claim more free stuff. So it's not, basically you could make one individual bundle of all that thing and then you just make the purchase. But like psychologically, it feels that you are claiming free stuff. And then if I make that purchase, I'm going to get even more free stuff, even though it could be bundled under the same price tag. But this type of a mechanic that Royal Match, I think, was the first started use, that now it's all around with Coin Masters and Toon Blast and many, many, many other games are using the same kind of an idea. Another one that could be interesting to highlight is the actually customizable IAP offers. This is, again, like coming back to the maybe more complex economies like EFK Arenas and these mid-core, hardcore games where you have so much stuff in your economy, so much, you know, currency, so much different things that you can upgrade your characters with and items and you name it. But like we have seen this type of a thing appearing as well, giving kind of like a little bit of more player agency that, okay, there are three slots for this offer. And then this is the kind of like a pool where you can choose from. Then that dictates kind of like the price point of the offer. So kind of like create your own bundle and then purchase that for your own specific needs. Like mentioned, AFK Arena, Raid, Shadow Legends has been using this as well. they're just kind of like a couple examples to throw around of kind of like variations on just, you know, creating a different bundles. And naturally there is the segmentation and targeting for specific users and so on. But also like mechanically wise, there are quite, different ways to create your just your basic IAP bundle offers.
Yeah, you can definitely see that becoming much more prevalent. Because just the as you say, the level of agency, the sort of the player feels by, you know, I want these specific things. Obviously, behind the scenes, you have to be very clever about exactly what you're offering them at what price. But again, just the psychological sort of triggers of you feeling like you're in control probably means you're going to spend more money, which is sort of what the game developer, you know, it's a win-win there. The player's feeling better about what they're doing and they're spending more. So it's, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And, of course, the targeting, the bundle offer targeting systems are so sophisticated that they know that what are the things that, you know, would be valuable for at that point, or can give you those really, very specific offers and so on. But like that kind of a, you know, giving that choice, maybe preference to the player is kind of like an interesting concept for sure.
Good. So before we end, this is going to be our longest podcast so far, I think, isn't it? You've really gone through it in a lot of detail. So we've gone through a lot of what sort of happened and the trends over the last 2 years. How do we think, is the future going to be just sort of the same as the past and sort of more of these things coming in? Or do you think some of them are going to sort of become more relevant as sort of time goes on?
Well, one thing that I'm really looking forward to see and analyze is definitely the web store monetization part, which is because it's a big thing for many. The fees are big and the toughness of the market nowadays overall and profits going down with all on the whole market and so on. So any way of kind of like increasing your profits from your game, it's an interesting kind of like a trend. And to be honest, one key thing over there is as well, like what's the adoption actually for the users? Because there's friction for having the web stores. Like you need to go outside of the app and so on. So how does it actually people and players of different genres, how they adapt to that kind of thing? So that is definitely the most interesting thing for like in terms of monetization, at least for me to follow in the upcoming year or so.
Yeah, I would say like, I definitely agree. I think we will most likely see more external web stores in games, but I would say like many of these subjects that we talked upon or touched upon, I would see many of these like trends continuing further in the future. For example, we talked about the Battle Pass plan monetization used in events. I personally think that's like super clever if you manage to like implement it correctly. So I would see more of games monetizing their events through these, you know, you have the free layer and the premium layer. On top of that, I would say there will be probably some kind of change, like possibly some kind of changes being the gacha monetization, like maybe some games like we just had Mario Kart removing gachas in the game. But also, honestly, on top of that, Wild Rift just added gachas to their Chinese version, now just adding gachas or soon adding gachas to the Western version. So it's hard to say if gachas will be, you know, trending down or up, but of course it's maybe there will be more transfers in the future in gachas. Maybe that's the key there. And, you know, talking about cosmetic monetization, I think sort of as social elements and sort of these, maybe even some games nowadays, these sort of light metaverse elements like the social hangout lobbies in some casual games or mid-core games are becoming more and more common, and there's more social elements coming, and well, they're already huge. I think that's like already boosting, but we're going to boost the sort of cosmetic economy or cosmetic meta and the cosmetic monetization even further as players, you know, of course, having social elements, players, other players seeing your character, your avatar makes your cosmetics more valuable. So I would see that coming, especially even to more some casual games. Like I think I talk about Cooking Diary a couple of times already here, but I think that's just a really great example of, you know, they have been able to make that sort of cosmetic meta of customizing your avatar character like quite well and valuable. And also, Stumble Guys is really interesting game, but there's the similar game to Stumble Guys in the Chinese top crossing ranks, a really new one. So Egg Party, And I think that is, I would really recommend everyone to actually check what that kind of game is. That's a really interesting iteration of the Stumble guys / Fall guys. And they actually have this sort of, it feels kind of this metaverse lobby. So there's not really like this normal game menu, but there's actually this lobby where players can hang out with each other and play around and go to different game modes inside the lobby. And, you know, and of course that, as the game is like really heavily cosmetic monetized, that only makes those cosmetics even like more appealing. And I would see possibly, you know, if hangout lobbies become more common in casual games, then the sort of cosmetic monetization probably becomes more common as well there.
Yeah, no, two good points there. I mean, it's very interesting, I guess, without going into another whole podcast about metaverses and stuff. It is kind of weird that they're seen as very specific sort of things, whereas actually, you know, as you say, a slightly bigger version of a social lobby hangout that just sort of gets expanded over time ends up probably broadly similar to what we think they should be. But it's, the question is, I guess, whether they're top-down imposed by big media companies or whether they sort of bottom-up grown by successful existing sort of interactive spaces or games. So, but I guess definitely going back to your main point, Erno, if companies can get a sizable amount of their big spenders onto a web platform, then clearly there's just that gaining back of the 30% margin is going to be the one big sort of upside they can do. I mean, there's all these very clever things you can do to maybe increase monetization by 5-10% or something, but something as clearly structural as like getting your big spenders, getting their 30% back. And obviously, if you're logging them through your website, you're getting all their personal data, all that sort of stuff that basically people have given up to app stores for the last 10 years to get distribution. I mean, that's going to be the big sort of seismic sort of change maybe over the next... Yeah, a few years.
Yeah, definitely. And if you look at the, you know, especially mid-core, hardcore games, nowadays launching, pretty much all of them have some kind of a cross-play possibility. Even, like, not necessarily just the, you know, web store, but actually have a possibility to play on your PC and then, you know, monetize from there. And then, you know, bigger companies like Plarium, they have their own client and then you can pretty much play all of those games over there as well. So definitely kind of like this cross-platform play, but also like, you know, in terms of the monetization, this kind of like possibilities, I would assume definitely happening more and more in the future.
And on that note, I'll just say thank you very much, Erno and Wilhelm. Excellent, excellent research there. Really gone through in incredible detail.
Thank you.
And thanks to you for listening, watching, however you're consuming the podcast. Every episode, we are really digging into what's going on in the mobile game space. As you can see, despite being, what are we now, 10 years old as a proper industry, or longer than 10 years old now, but sort of 10 years old as a sort of serious place where people make a lot of money in the game space. Still so much more to come. So many new business models and so many new games to be developed and played. So please do subscribe by your podcast channel of choice. Come back next time, see what's going on in the world of mobile gaming. See you then. Goodbye.